exciting goes, we're going to have to wait and see what does happen. Whether we get any callers in some enlivening conversation, the main line to call in is 244-8177. Let's hear from you so I don't have to sit here and talk to this microphone. And the backup line is 201-6955. Well, creationism is what people seem to like to hear me talk about. And as far as a lot of you like to talk about social policy, politics, and so forth, you say, well, what's creationism have to do with that? Well, let me put this out for your consideration. I one time heard Dr. Rush Dooney, who was into the Christian he was often called the granddaddy of Christian Reconstructionism. I heard him one time say that your view of creation will be reflected in your view of politics and social order. And a simple example of that would be if you were to think that you were just if people think of people as just animals, just another higher form of an ape or a frog or whatever, then they ought to be treated as such. On the other hand, if you are made in the image of God, then there's a whole nother story involved because of the individuality of a person. The person is a soul made in the image of God, and so you can see there's a difference. You don't treat dogs like you'd treat people, although a lot of people seem to think that their dog is or their cat is their own kid, and that's how they treat them. And in reverse, people are often thought of as or treated like pets. You know, it's like Ken Ham says, the creation speaker. He says, "Get rid of stray cats, get rid of stray kids," and of course, we have an abortion industry that does just that. So you can see where, in the social aspect of things, that's how the United States has become. They don't treat people as created in the image of God. They're just another animal on the earth, and the elite seem to think that they can take care of people as they herd cattle, as they do like with a veterinarian when the animal is beyond hope and the animal is critical and dying, they just give it an injection. And of course, the euthanasia movement, they want to do the same thing with people. And of course, we saw the beginnings of this with Terry Schiavo and that situation. In Holland, they're already doing things like that, and in other countries as well. Well, so you say, I believe in creationism, but I don't believe in creationism, six-day creationism. You need to prove to me, you need to show to me that this Bible is a book that is rational, that has information in it that I can sink my intellectual teeth into and use it. Well, a little history here. When you when Darwin first published his book in 1859 called The Origin of the Species, it was not readily accepted by the scientific community, and Darwin himself was not all that vehement in endorsing his book. He saw defects in it, he recognized them, and other people recognized them as well. But there was a situation where you had the establishment like the idea. What it did at bottom was to take God out of the picture, and man created in the image of God and made it so that they could do the social manipulation that the social planners wanted to do. And so they violated the rules of science, and they just overwhelmed the scientific community and anybody that would get in their way. And they, to this day, they have conquered the scientific world, even though they are being challenged now. And of course, now that they're challenged, when the big guy gets challenged, he can outmuscle the little guy, whether by money or just by sheer volume of material. I want to quote something here from a book by one Roussos, John Rushdoony, the Rushdoony that I referred to a moment ago. In his book, The One and the Many, which was published back in 1971, he quotes Dr. Cornelius Van Til, who shows the problem that is put upon Christians, in that the science people want to put up a big smokescreen when they want to propagate evolution. And when they want to propagate evolution, they don't have all the facts. And so they try to put the facts in subject to themselves. And so let me quote here from The One and the Many. It says that sinners use the principle of chance back of all things, and the idea of exhaustive rationalization as the legitimate aim of science. If the universe were actually what these men assume it to be, according to their principle, there would be no science. Science is possible and actual only because the non-believer's principle is not true, and the believer's principle is true. Only because God has created the universe and does control it by his providence is there such a thing as science at all. Well, I read that quote because there's a principle in it, and I trust you can see it. And I'm going to read back here. It says, if the universe were actually what these men assume it to be according to their principle, there would be no science. And science is possible and actual only because the non-believer's principle is not true and the believer's principle is true. All right. It's I'm getting the sign here. It's time for a break, and we'll be right back to continue with this.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
All right, this is Greg Farrier back, substituting for Dr. Coben, who is away down in South America, lecturing on free markets. So you've got me for a little while longer. And I'm speaking on the subject of creationism and how it affects public policy. And if you have any other ideas on how these things apply to our lives, give us a call, 244-8177, and our secondary line is 201-6955. Good morning to you. All right, well, I was quoting from a book by Rush Dooney, who was quoting Dr. Van Til, who was one of the great apologist of the 20th century. He died back around 1980, and he developed a presuppositional analysis and argument in apologetics, showing that the unbeliever and the believer have the same facts, but what we presuppose in our facts is the conclusion that we will come to. If I presuppose that the Bible is the self-authenticating Word of God, God authenticates Himself in it, and it authenticates itself, then I would be a creationist, and I would believe what the Scriptures say, talking about the blood of Christ being an atonement for sinners. And when you have the unbeliever who presupposes against the Word of God, and wants to dethrone God and to make himself the king of the universe, as the Bible says that Satan did or tried to do, then you have a whole, it's a different presupposition, and you come to different conclusions. The let me put it to you this way. Have you ever really been snowed by somebody? Do you know what that means, to be snowed by somebody? If you're driving in a snowstorm, it's hard to see. And if it gets really bad, things get confusing and you have to stop. Well, that's basically what evolutionism had done in the 19th century with people. There were people that basically overwhelmed the Christian apologists and the Christian community, the seminaries, with things that they called facts, and they also would look at evidences, and they had a presupposition that the evidences said that the earth was older than the Bible said. In other words, here's something contrary to the Bible. There was a man by the name of Lyell in the early 1800s who would observe layers in the earth, like you look at the Grand Canyon, or from Greenville here, driving up into Kentucky, or you can even go up into Asheville here, and you look at all the layers where they cut the road through. You can look out to your left, to your right, and you see all the rock there, and it all looks like it's in layers. And Mr. Lyell, who was somebody who influenced Darwin greatly, said that this took thousands or millions of years for all this to happen. See, now the Bible is, it's wrong. The Bible just, if you take it literally, the Bible is, says the earth is maybe no more than 6,000, 7,000, 10,000 years old, depending upon how you look at the chronologies. But I look at this, and I've observed that these earth layers come down, and he made a supposition that these layers came down, say, once every 1,000 years, once every 10,000 years. And therefore, if you look at that and see these layers here, you say, well, the earth is very old. And so, therefore, it what this does is throws doubt on the credibility of the Bible. Well, that is a this is data. This is something that people look at, and they say, "Okay, here's what I see," and now you're supposing something. You're supposing that all this came down over a long period of time. Okay. All right, we had a little glitch there for a minute. All this took place over a long period of time. There's data. You're presupposing an old earth. Well, a real interesting thing happened several years ago when Mount St. Helens out in the northwest erupted. We actually observed how long it took these layers to form. When the volcano erupted, a big section of that mountain came down in a big sea of mud. And that sea of mud, it came down off the mountain when the snow caps on there melted, and it came down in through a ravine there, and after it made a huge mudslide. Well, the volcano being a hot thing, and all that being a very hot area under the volcano, what happened when all that, after everything had settled down, the explorers and the scientists all went out there to look and see what was going on, and they were walking around out there, and they noticed these big potholes in the mud, in the silt and everything that came down. And it was like the bubbles in pea soup, when, or a real thick soup. You look and it starts to come to a boil, and you start to see the air coming out of them, and you see them pop, 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 pop all over. Well, this very same type of thing happened with over here on Mount St. Helens, or down below Mount St. Helens. Well, they, after they all cooled down and settled down, they started to go down into them, and they began to see that this all came down on the inside there. They noticed that all this came down in layers, just like you would see along the highways of Kentucky, up in toward Ash, between South Carolina and Asheville, and Tennessee as well. And so they realize that all this happened in 3 days, or somewhere around that time. I may be a little off on that, but when that mudslide came down and settled, and they looked and they saw all these layers, they had evidence that this happened in a very short period of time, not the thousands or millions of years that we'd all been presupposing over that time. So here you have, it was a real godsend to the creationists in that here they have evidence right there. It was proven. It was real science. It was not something that was presupposed. It was actually observed. So now we find out it's time to take a break, and we'll be back in a few moments.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins.
There is a place for government in the affairs of men, and our Declaration of Independence tells us precisely what that is. The role of government is to protect individuals in their God-given individual rights. Freedom is the natural birthright of man, but all that government can do in behalf of freedom is to let the individual alone, and it should secure him his rights by making others let him alone. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 142.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
All right. We're trying to hurl this with great force. We're trying to, as Dr. Walter Williams says, push back the frontiers of ignorance and see what we can do here. Call in 244-8177. Don't let me just talk to this little microphone here. And we also have the backup line is 201-6955. All right, this is Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. John Coben, who's away down in South America, and he's lecturing on free markets down there. There are even people down there that are interested in free markets. I wonder how many are interested in free markets up here. All right, I was talking about the layers in the rock layers in regard to creationism, the rock layers in the earth, and what we presuppose. There was a man back in the 19th century by the name of Lyell who, in order to have his theories propagated, presupposed that the layers that we see in the earth formed over a long period of time. And then, wonderfully, in that disaster, God revealed to the scientific community that layers can come down very quickly, and that they—it's not necessary that the layers that we see along the roadside where the roads are cut through happen over a long period of time. Or in the Grand Canyon, you look out and you see the different colored rocks and things of that nature. It very well could have, according to our observations, happened very quickly, and perhaps even within 40 days and 40 nights, like the Bible talks about a flood, where the fountains of the great deep broke up and all kinds of catastrophe happened. And we're not talking about just a flood like some of the ones we've had recently here in Greenville. We're talking about a huge area where, you know, whole cities, whole towns, whole continents were shifted and covered and everything else like that. And so the flood is the key to geology, and the flood is an explanation of how the earth has formed the way it is. The great Ken Ham uses the term billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. You want me to say that again? Billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. Why, what does that look like? Well, it looks like it could have been a flood. I wonder, was there a flood? And how long ago was it? Well, according to the scriptures, it was only a few thousand years ago, and it changed the face of the earth. And if you get into this and look at this, you see all kinds of scientific tests that can be put upon the face of the earth, the phenomena on the face of the earth. And it's most amazing that it's not only are we fearfully and wonderfully made, the earth itself is fearfully and wonderfully made. There were floods and catastrophes and all kinds of things that go on in this fallen world. Yet God, in His mercy, has given us the opportunity to observe these things. And as we observe them, we learn more about the history of the earth. Well, that is all well and good and very important. But what is the bottom line here of what we're trying to demonstrate here right now? You have two different presuppositions. You have the unbeliever who takes the evidences and he tries to make the earth old. And when he tries to make the earth old, what he's basically doing is trying to show the Bible to be untrue. The believer has the evidences, and he presupposes that the Bible is true. Did I say the unbeliever is trying to talk about the Bible being true? No, he wants it to be untrue. I grew up thinking in terms of evolution. The earth was old. They call that a uniformitarian point of view. Everything is the way it was. All the different everything was time the way everything went along in a uniform pattern of things all throughout the many years of history, all right, the billions or millions of years of history. All right, we're getting the sign. It's time for a break, and we'll be right back.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain. The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
All right, this is Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben, who's in South America lecturing on free markets. There is a market for free markets down there. People want to hear about it, so they've called him down there, and I can hardly wait to hear what he has to say when he gets back. But in the meantime, this is Greg Farrier substituting for him, and I'm generally talking on the subject of creationism, and I guess I've thrown a little apologetics in there as well, apologetics being a defense of the faith, and maybe a little debunking of the evolutionary point of view. I referred to when I was growing up, all I really knew was evolution. I went to church, my mother sent me to church, and there was it was basically what we would call today a liberal church, where you used the old hymns of the faith, you mentioned the name of Jesus and God and God Bless America and all that sort of thing, but the Bible was not the final authority on things. And this church and the other ones that my mother preferred would tell you if you wanted to go to heaven, you just be a good boy, and we're all just fine, and all will be well. One of the things that I think, in my observations of history, was that the apologetic of the 19th century, that's the 1800s for those of you in sections that some of you victims of the public school, of which I am one. I'm a recovering victim of the public school. The apologetic of the churches, in other words, as they defended the faith, they were using a technique, you might say, called evidentialism. In that the one side, the unbelieving side, would come in and pile up all its evidence on the table, and the church would come in and they would pile their evidence on their side of the table. Well, it seems like with the advent of Lyellianism, with the origin of the species, with all the so-called evidences that they brought forth, the stack got bigger on the evidential side of the table, on the unbelieving side of the table, and the poor ministers, they evidently in evidences couldn't keep up. So what are you going to do? Well, it turns out that there was compromise, and compromise leading to apostasy and all sorts of disaster in the church, and the church is still recovering from such a thing. Even the great B.B. Warfield, professor at Old Princeton, would accept the evidences of an old earth, and the young earthers were far and few between. And so that was the problem. The evidences, the side that could come up with the most evidences would be the winner, or ostensibly be the winner. It just looked the best to the uneducated, uninitiated observer. And so the church would, I guess, kind of slink off and deteriorate into what I would call fideism. In other words, you would say something like, well, I believe it because the Bible says it, and that's enough. But to the observer who is looking betwixt and between, they say, well, that's just a cop-out. And in one way, when you look at it, it is a cop-out when you just ignore the facts and just say, well, I'm just going to believe it, and you don't challenge them on the evidences. You don't challenge the unbeliever on the evidences. And this is what the church ended up as, is just dealing with what we would call just fideism. In other words, don't deal with science, don't deal with the facts. All I'm going to do is show my believe the Bible. As I say, there are some that have to go into their corner and hide there, and they do not challenge the unbeliever. Now, talking in terms of presuppositionalism, you come out and you challenge the unbeliever with the facts, just like with the Mount St. Helens thing. Lyell and the unbeliever said that the layers took a long time. Well, you come out and you demonstrate by the facts that the layers could very possibly have been have just taken a short time to form. So here you have a battle of evidences in a presuppositional format or point of view. Now, when you had the people that that caved in and they got the church got beat up, it retreated into other things. And so there was a lack of science scientists that actually believed the Bible. Nobody, the unbelieving world had the church on the run, sorry to say. The when around 1960, there was two gentlemen. One gentleman was a hydraulic engineer by the name of Henry Morris, and another theologian by the name of John Whitcomb, who got together, and they were both Christians, and they wrote a book called The Genesis Flood. And what they did do, they took these piles and piles of evidence, and of course John Morris, Henry Morris, excuse me, John's his son, Henry Morris took these evidences and began to show how evolution, the evolutionary people, the uniformitarians, the non-theists, had actually snowed us and snowed the people. They would demonstrate that the layers, there were places in the earth where these layers that came down had trees growing right through them from many layers, and some of the trees were even upside down. Well, what does that mean? You have evidence that this all happened very quickly in the time that that the tree grew, or the tree was just sitting there and it was washed away. When it all settled down, the tree was trapped between the layers. So here we have, in my estimation, at least in my experience, you have the beginning of a crack in the big facade of evolution. The church began to have those sincere believers, those who were looking to be able to answer with facts, were beginning to get something that they could grab hold of, a weapon that they could grab hold of. Now, let me digress a moment to show a parallel thing that happened to me in my college career. I took a course from a Jewish fellow in Old Testament in my college career, and he asked us to write an essay. And I wrote an essay on the validity of the Word of God and how the Bible is the Word of God. Well, I don't remember much of how I wrote it, but he came back at me and he says, "Haven't you ever heard of the documentary hypothesis?" And I said, "What?" And I'd been to a semester or two of Bible college at one time, and I'd never heard it. So he said, oh, well, there is a theory of the Bible and how the Bible was developed. And I guess he might have even been talking in terms of it being a factual thing. The documentary hypothesis. And he began to teach me about the documentary hypothesis. Now, this man had a PhD in Akkadian dialects, Akkad, being over, coming out of Babylon. This guy found the, he didn't find them, but he would go out there and translate all these little cuneiform clay tablets that they had found in these ancient places. And it was real interesting. He took us over to New York to a museum over there where he worked. And I lived in New Jersey at the time, and we'd go across the river into the Museum of Modern Art is where they kept it. And by the way, in growing up, it seemed like every year they would take us over to the, as little kids, they'd herd us into the buses. We go out across smelly old Sea Caucus, known as the Meadowlands now. And they have a racetrack and everything else over there. They built all that up. And they take us across there and through the Lincoln Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel on into the Museum of Natural History and show us all the dinosaurs and just inculcate that evolution into our mushy little brains. Thank God, sincerely, that he grabbed hold of my mind and my heart and changed my mind and my heart in all these matters. But getting back to my professor, he all that to say that the man was quite bright, quite brilliant, and talented in and knowledgeable in those ancient documents and ancient languages. Well, Dr. Spahr, that was his name. I guess, am I allowed to mention that on the air? If Ira finds out about it, then it's good for Ira. He told me about the documentary hypothesis, which at bottom is nothing more than an evolution of the scriptures. In other words, the Bible, we know that the Bible did develop. It didn't all just come right down out of heaven. It developed. Moses wrote the first five books. Some people think he might have even written Job. Of course, he's written a psalm. And then other people wrote other books on into the final book of the Revelation. It developed. Well, the documentary hypothesis, people, as I understand it, started by two men, one by the name of Groff and the other by the name of Wellhausen. We've come up with the Groff-Wellhausen documentary hypothesis. And what this does, to me, it parallels evolution. In other words, when Moses originally, they say that when Moses originally wrote his the Pentateuch, he didn't actually write all of it. But as time went on and their social situation changed, the political situation changed amongst the Israelites, that other people came in and added to it and edited the scriptures. So where maybe Moses wrote the first the first few chapters in one way, other people came in and edited it, and that's why they say, well, you have two stories of Genesis, and you also have different things that they call legends. And other people would see something wrong with this as time went by, and they would edit it. One of the things that this professor said to me was, if Moses wrote the whole Pentateuch, did he write of his own death? Well, I can give them that. Somebody can come in and whether Moses wrote of his own death or not, I don't particularly think so. I believe somebody came in and added that to the end of Deuteronomy, where Moses' death is written of. I have no problem with that and inspiration. But as you see, the scriptures, as they became larger and larger, more and more people edited them, and they changed over the years. So you see an evolution here. And so they have the same general idea of this. Well, that really struck me, and I didn't know what to do. It hit me kind of hard. So I was taking this course in Old Testament from him, and boy, he had us snowed. I remember this was right around the time of the Jesus movement, and you could see all the Jesus people in the class all wanted to learn about the Old Testament. They'd come to the wrong place, and I could see them. They all had this one particular type of New American Standard Bible with a padded cover, and you could just see their hearts break by the look on their faces when he would sit there and tell them about the scriptures and some of the invalid points that the scriptures would make and talk about. Well, I was the Lord was gracious to me, and I'll in a few minutes we'll come back and I'll tell you a little bit more about what happened.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins. This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
There is a place for government in the affairs of men, and our Declaration of Independence tells us precisely what that is. The role of government is to protect individuals in their God-given individual rights. Freedom is the natural birthright of man, but all that government can do in behalf of freedom is to let the individual alone, and it should secure him his rights by making others let him alone. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 142.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
All right, we're back after a little dead airspace there. I beg your pardon. Anyway, I was telling you a story of my college experience in trying to find out how to actually defend the faith and make it valid. I could see that this was the scriptures were the way, the truth, and the life. And if this professor was telling me that it wasn't, then I had big trouble because there was no way, truth, or life left. He talked about, I mentioned the documentary hypothesis before. Perhaps I should backtrack a little bit. The briefly stated, the documentary hypothesis says that you had people who edited the scriptures over the years. Now, they had a way of categorizing this. They had the letters J, E, P, and D. And the J, E, P, and D signified different people, different schools of editing, or different people that would edit the scriptures. They had the J stood for the Yahwists, or the Jerusalem source of the documentary hypothesis. This was the one where it used what's called the tetragrammation of God's name. In other words, Yahweh. Nobody really knew what if it was Jehovah. The English came up with the word Jehovah. They didn't have the vowels in there. All they had was those four letters in his name, so they came up with Jehovah. And in more modern times, we come up with the word Yahweh, because we put different we've learned a little more, and we put other vowels in between the consonants that we knew that were in the Hebrew name for God. And they were people that were the more early. It was a school that developed early. And then they had the E stood for the Elohist, like Elohim, Elohist type of school. And then you had the Deuteronomist school. And then you had the P, which was priestly, the priestly source. And then you had the Deuteronomic school, and all these had their like the evolutionists started out with millions of years and had to go up to billions. The documentary hypothesis people went from J, E, P, and D to J subhead 1, J subhead 2, P, E, and D, and so forth. And what happened there, as their theory began to unravel on them, they basically had to put these band-aids on these subheadings as band-aids on them. If anybody out there is interested in reading up on the documentary hypothesis and the and how to answer it, or where it really does come from, if you can find the old works of one Robert Dick Wilson, one of the great scholars of the late 19th century, early 20th century. He wrote a commentary on Daniel where he addressed these matters, and he also wrote a little pamphlet called Is the Higher Criticism Scholarly? And Dr. Wilson was one of these people that knew, I think, altogether something like about 30 of the ancient languages, and he took on the higher critics. And more as an evidentialist, he was one of these guys that when they put the big pile on the table, he come and put a bigger pile on the table, and so he could overwhelm the critics of the scriptures. An interesting thing that happened to me, and it was really, shall I say, thought changing. I don't know about life changing, but I guess when your thoughts change, your life changes somewhat. But I was sitting in a class, and it wasn't just one day, but over the days in the class, this professor would come up with a lot of interesting facts, but he'd also come up with all these points and what he called evidences. And so I'm sitting in the class, and I remember one of the things that he said was that in the Bible, we read about Abraham's servant riding on camels to find a wife for Isaac. And he says, well, we now know that camels weren't even domesticated back at the time of Abraham. It's funny that he recognized that a man called Abraham really did exist, and somewhere around 2000 BC. And he said that camels were not domesticated yet. And that among, if I remember right, there was about a dozen of these little points that he made that showed the Bible to be wrong. So I said, well, I am still going to believe the Bible. I guess you might say just out of sheer determination. I went and took all these little points down, and I went over to a Catholic seminary and found a bunch of archaeological magazines and documents and things like that. And I began to find evidences that said, I remember one article, and this is just an example, I remember one article where they found a tomb that predated Abraham, and they found these camels buried in there with all kinds of, they had them in their harnesses with all the bells and decorations and everything else on them. And this dated to at least the time of Abraham, if I remember right, predated, although you don't go too far much further back before Abraham and the flood. And I said, well, here's one evidence. And if I remember right, I found two or three more evidences that said, Doctor, I've got evidence that says that you're wrong here, that your evidence is wrong. Well, I never really did that, but it was for my own satisfaction. And another thing that I remember finding a lot of material, Unger's Bible Handbook will give you a lot of information about this. It's been around for a long time. It's gone through several editions, but it's got a lot of good material in there. In matters of archaeology and Bible history and so forth. But after doing two or three of those evidences, and over the years I've done more, but at that time I said to myself, you know, you kind of get what the boys on Car Talk talk about. You get a dope slap. You say, hey, wait a minute now. What in the world are you doing here doing battle with the unbeliever on his own ground? With evidences. This could go on all day. He goes out and gives me 12 and say I answer all of them, and he'll come back with 12 more or 20 more of these evidences wherein he, so-called evidences that he has, where he presupposes that the scriptures are wrong. Well, I began to understand, and somebody had put into my hands The Reformed Pastor and Modern Thought by Dr. Van Til. And I started to look at this, and he began to demonstrate how presuppositions do determine how the end at which your argument is going to come to. And so I began to realize that all the valid evidences can be corroborated with Scripture. In other words, if they go out and give you honest information, you know, this is a bone, this is a cartwheel, this is a script or a scroll, and they put it out in front of you, and the two of you look at this thing, and you can gather evidence. If it is valid evidence, the Bible can eventually corroborate proper evidences. And of course, you know, if the Bible isn't speaking about the ice man that they found up in the Alps, well, then the Bible has nothing to do with that, except maybe if you knew how long he's been there, You know what I mean by the Iceman. They found this guy frozen in the ice up in the Alps, up in up above Germany, right near the border where the Alps go down into Italy and so forth. I'm not quite sure of the geography there, but they found this guy frozen in the ice there, and they say he'd been frozen there for 4,000 years. Well, you go back to 4,000 years, that's right around the time of Abraham. And I dare say that a Bible-believing archaeologist or paleontologist could come up with some valid evidences that would corroborate the scriptures. Evidences do not invalidate the scriptures. Evidences may not speak to what the scriptures speak to, but they don't invalidate the scriptures. So with that, we'll take a break and be right back.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins. This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
All right, here we're back again. This is Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben, who's away down in South America, pushing back the frontiers of ignorance, hopefully satisfying the hunger of the people down there in South America that have invited him down there to speak about free markets. And if you want to call into the show here and have a chat, you're welcome to do so on the main line, 244-8177, and the secondary line is 201-6955. I'll say that one more time, 244-8177, the secondary line is 201-6955. I was talking about the evidences that I had come up with and the professor came up with, and I began to realize that it was the presuppositions that you that will give you a valid way of defending your faith and giving yourself assurances that you are right in standing with the scriptures. It was a long time ago when that happened, and the unbelieving world hasn't given up. Since then, there have been a whole lot of there's been a lot of creationist activity. The first and biggest one that I'm aware of was out in California, where they had the ICR, the Institute for Creation Research, started by Henry Morris years ago. And they were the people that gave us the book called The Genesis Flood, which just is a big pile of evidence upon evidence of the validity of the scriptures. In other words, when you have the evidences of flood, it was like what I referred to before, the dope slap that says, hey, wait a minute, you know, all these layers and all these fossils and things things like that are evidences for a flood. Let me quote again Ken Ham's famous saying, billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. And have we got a phone call coming in here? We'll see in a minute. Anyway, these are all evidences for the flood. Wake up and use them.
TRN?
So.
Hello, TRN?
Hello, it's Delta. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I can't hear him. We got a caller on the line? I can't hear him in my headset. Work on that a little bit and see if we can get him.
You there?
Yeah.
Well, I hear him through the other phone there. Go right ahead. Can they hear him on the air? Go ahead and speak. This is who?
Okay.
Oh, hello, Nelson. Well, thank you. Oh yeah, well, TRN is diverse. We don't just do the social policy type of thing and the political end of things. It all blends together. I didn't hear everything you said, but in regard to, I think you said something like there was a recent meeting in Greenville that dealt with the creation-evolution debate, right? A bunch of scientists came to Greenville, and they've been around the country in various parts of the country. Is that what you're referring to? We're doing a little fix here, Nelson. We'll be with you in a minute. And if we happen to lose you, I think I know what you're talking about, so I'll address that if you like. Are you still with us? Okay, good. Recently there was what they call an intelligent design conference over at the Palmetto Center. I don't know how many people attended or what actually went on there, but The key word here, Nelson, is intelligent design. And it's something that evangelicals, Bible believers can use, but you need to use it with caution, in my estimation. Now, if anybody wants to comment on that, anybody else out there that wants to correct me or add to what I say, you can get a hold of me at gjf@mindspring.com. That's an email address that you can get a hold of me at. But intelligent design, it is comfortable for the theist, and it is comfortable for the atheist. You get where I'm coming from on this?
Yes, I do. I don't think I'm being heard on the air, so I'll sign off. Have a great day. Keep up the good work.
All right. Well, thanks a whole lot. All right. Well, Nelson signed off, but he was asking about the situation with the creation, the intelligent design seminar that went on recently at the Palmetto Expo Center. And I'm glad Nelson called in about this because it gives me an opportunity to comment on this. When you say intelligent design, it doesn't necessarily mean that God is the intelligence that designed it, the God of the Bible, that is. We're talking in terms of you have like a Hindu or a Buddhist point of view where you have creation itself, the creation itself, the universe as it exists. Notice how I'm having trouble using something other than creation for the definition, because the unbeliever actually has to borrow or steal from the believer when he has evidence or he has a vocabulary that he needs to use. Well, anyway, the intelligent design problem is that there's a doctrine out there like Mother Earth or Gaia or something like the Buddhists or the Hindus, your karma. That is the intelligence that designed the universe and so forth. The evangelical can be fairly comfortable using that and saying intelligent design, and that all intelligence comes from God, the God of heaven and earth, and all knowledge comes from Him. So there is some kind of a ostensible neutral ground there in putting this forth. The nice thing that I see, the positive thing I see about this is that people don't like what Darwin taught and Lyell taught. They are beginning to go out and look and say, hey, wait a minute now, the evidences don't all stack up. And to use an old expression, the chickens are beginning to come home to roost. And the evidences are catching up with something that was a big snow job for a long, long time. Let me endorse the Creation Study Group that meets every so often. I'll have more information on when they actually do this. There is a group in Greenville that meets at Second Presbyterian Church on a regular basis, and they have lecturers and speakers come in and speak on the study of creation. These are all evangelical Bible believers and well-versed in creation evolution controversy. And I've been associated with them for years. I was a founding member, actually, and I have taken a hiatus from that for a little while. I hope to get back and involved with them again, but let me endorse these fine people. And you get a pile of information. They have piles and piles of books and tapes, and they can sit down and converse with you. They're all rather articulate people and knowledgeable in these matters. I have, if I have the time here, I'm going to start reading a little article that I picked off the web here from www.answersingenesis.org. And this is an outfit headed up by one Mr. Ken Ham, who broke away from, it was a friendly breakaway from all I understand of it, broke away from ICR, and they basically, ICR is in California, and Ken Ham is up in Kentucky, not far from Cincinnati, and he's out there. There's another favorite of mine, Walt Brown, out in Phoenix, who you can read his whole book at www.creationscience.com, and you can go online there and read the whole book for free, last I checked, or you can buy the book for about $25. You can email me at that gjf@mindspring.com if you're interested in getting a hold of that book, and I'll call the folks at Creation Study Group, and they have that book available along with many others. Well, let me read this thing from Answers in Genesis that I picked up. It's dated August 11th, 2005, and it's by Vice President of Outreach at AIG USA, one Mr. Mark Loy, that's spelled L-O-O-Y. And he is commenting on a TV program on the History Channel. He says, there is one thing AIG can agree with regarding the new evolutionary documentary Ape to Man that first aired on the History Channel last Sunday, August 7th. So you see where the date is there. In America, and will be rebroadcast later today, August 11th, which must be the day he's writing. It is the comment made by the program producers that a compelling question in our history is, where do we come from? Which leads to the ultimately more important question, why are we here? Which the Bible addresses from Genesis to Revelation. But that's about all creationists have in common with the beliefs expressed by the TV program's producers. As someone holding 2 degrees in history and possessing good knowledge of the fossil record, I know something about the difficulties in trying to reconstruct the past. It's tricky business. Sometimes it's more nefarious. Monkey business in some cases. For example, we have an argument even this week among historians about an event that occurred in relatively recent world history. I read an article yesterday that claims that the devastation of the atomic bombs dropped on Japan in 1945, with the threat of additional bombs being dropped, was not the main reason the Japanese decided to surrender to end World War II, but rather it was the threat of Russian invasion from the West. If trained scholars today, with their access to mounds of information, and even many eyewitnesses and decision makers, will strongly disagree on such a recent event, then trying to go back over the millennia to draw conclusions about man's origins, typically based on fragments of bones, is a highly iffy proposition. Words like suggest, if, it is also believed, punctuate the TV program as the ape men are built one speculative bone at a time. In the end, though, and employing just a little critical thinking, the thoughtful viewer is able to see that these ape men are instead really just straw men created out of the minds of evolutionist scientists. In other words, they were snowing you for all this time. The program, which displayed more candor than others, which promote the evolutionary worldview, admitted that the fossil record is built on the tiniest fragments of the past. That's a quote, the tiniest fragments of the past. At the same time, however, it confidently declared that the puzzle of human origins has been, quote-unquote, finally pieced together. And he goes on and gives a little summary of the program here. As the History Channel's website declares, the search for the origins of humanity is a story of bones and the tales they tell. It was in 1856 that the first bones of an extinct human ancestor were encountered, Neanderthal man. The TV program, however, in contradicting the website, states that not only did Neanderthals have a bigger brain than most humans and possessed a keener sense of smell, they were around during the time of modern humans, and so were not our ancestors. They are not a true missing link of an extinct human ancestor. I could comment on this a little more personally. There's a book called Buried Alive, written by an orthodontist. And I commend that to you. I believe they have that over at the Creation Study Group, where he talks about Neanderthals. Very, very interesting. For a clearer rebuttal to Neanderthal as being something of a brutish ancestor of ours, which is still paraded in the media and in school texts, get your kids out of the public schools, as one proof of, and that was me saying get your kids out of the public school, as one proof of molecules to man evolution, you see Neanderthal man, the changing picture, that's a link on here, that I just referred to. If there was a little discontinuity in my reading, I was referring to a link as I'm getting it off of here. But they evidently have a link here titled Neanderthal Man, the Changing Picture at answersingenesis.org. All right, back to the little essay here. Now let's see how long it will take the textbooks to catch up with this conclusion about Neanderthal Man. Soon after the discovery of the Neanderthal bones, Darwin was on the scene with the publication of his famous 1859 Origins book, and, as the channel's web article continues, by the end of the 19th century, it, evolution, had become the hottest topic of the age. Over 100 years later, it remains one of the hot topics in America's culture wars, as witnessed by this week's cover story of Time magazine called Evolution Wars. And they have another link about this. The TV researchers did at least point out that the theories of scientists do change, and that many scientists have been taken in, even with extreme gullibility, by such hoaxes as Piltdown Man. They were duped for decades. Even this confession of scientists having been taken in by a hoax was used by the TV program to buttress the human ancestor claims of Raymond Dart and his Australopithecus find, which had been rejected for several years because the evolutionists had put their faith in Piltdown Man instead. I even did pronounce Australopithecus right the first time. All right, just a couple more short paragraphs. In Ape to Man, reenactments tell stories like those of the work of Eugene de Bos, a Dutch doctor who left his practice in the late 1800s in search of the missing link, and then, while in Java, supposedly found an ape-like skeleton. To use the word used in, on the website of the History Channel, it was hardly a skeleton. Only two bones, a part of a skull cap and a leg bone, were found, which the program admitted was meager evidence. While the scientist world at the time correctly rejected de Bos's conclusion that he had found the missing link, it was to be embraced later by the evolutionist community as a bridge between humans and an ape-like ancestor. A web critique of this speculative TV program could go on for many thousands of words, including how it recounts the famous Lucy. And we note that hardly anything was mentioned in the program about the accuracy of the dating methods used to assign dates to alleged fossil finds, accuracy or inaccuracy. And it says here, for a full review of the fossil record of man, read Professor Marvin Lubinow's comprehensive book, Bones of Contention, which I suppose the Creation Study Group could get it, or you could order it from Answers in Genesis. In the end, you will discover that the Bible, not the highly imaginative minds of TV producers at the History Channel, tells the true history of the world, including the origin of the first people in Genesis 1. All right, that's it for now. And we'll be looking to see you tomorrow morning, same time, same place. And we'll take on maybe creation and a few other things. I hope to have Austin Farley on one of these days this week from the Political Cesspool out in Memphis. And we have a link to them. And Dr. Stephen Yates may come on Thursday, so stay tuned.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. And now, here is Dr. Coben with today's edition of Liberty Minute.
Are you aware of how your right to bear arms, guaranteed by the Second Amendment to the Constitution, applies to Christian faith and practice today? This is Dr. John Coben with Liberty Minutes. The Second Amendment to the American Constitution is familiar to many of us. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Along with the other 9 initial amendments, collectively known as the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment was ratified by 10 of the original 13 states on December 15, 1791. Pro forma ratification of the Bill of Rights was given by Vermont after it became a state in 1791, about a year and a half after the proposed amendments were sent to the states for ratification, and by Georgia, Connecticut, and Massachusetts in 1939. The words well regulated